Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
And I'm Evan Novy Williams, and this is the From Daycare to Domination sports business podcast, The Sportacast.
Hey? Do I have to use words? Do I have to use words, or can I just make noises? Hey?
Earlier this year, South Carolina coach Dawn Staley said of her women's basketball team, they were so young, it felt like she was running a daycare.
Ah.
And flash forward, the team goes undefeated, steamrolls its way through the NCAA tournament, including a finals win over Caitlin Clark and the Iowa Hawkeyes. One of the more dominant women's basketball teams that we've seen in a while. But I think, Scott, you and I, the more interesting part of this story is just the massive commercial growth and popularity growth that women's basketball has seen recently, but particularly in the past 4 weeks, with TV records shattering and social media growth setting new records and ticket prices going through the roof. It feels like this was a watershed 3 or 4 weeks in women's basketball, and we'll see if it's able to continue when some of these stars are in professional basketball and when some of these stars return for future tournaments.
So many ways I can take this. One, I was with a number of prospective sports investors recently, as were you. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you the number that said, I want to look at the NWSL. I want to look at the WNBA. They see the opportunity for what some people like Alexis Ohanian have been saying for at least a couple of years, that if you look at this from an investor deck, here's the evidence. And what did he say at South by a couple of years ago? It was like the venture capital dudes in the vest weren't listening. They didn't care. Yeah. They would have thrown millions of dollars at some cockamamie idea. But the one that brought the data that said, here's why you should, they wanted no part of, because it was just women's sports. I also want to go back to, I don't know, how many years has it been since we had the utter domination of UConn and Tennessee? Remember when it was just UConn and people were asking, well, is it bad for women's college basketball that everything is centered in Storrs, Connecticut, and you know who's going to win, and they're just so darn dominant? And I don't know. Was the answer yes? Because clearly now, with a dissemination of talent across the nation and an upstart in Iowa, and you've got South Carolina, and you've got UConn and Tennessee, and people are like, oh, wait a minute, there's some rivalries here, there's some competition here, and lo and behold, there's some eyeballs here too. Everybody wants to see what's going on.
Yeah, so let's dive into that. I think that's a great point and a good place to start.
Is it a 3-meter springboard, an 8-meter springboard? I just need to frame.
We're going high.
You're going for
one that doesn't even spring. That's how high.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
You're right. For two decades, UConn and Tennessee dominated this sport in a way that I think a lot of people thought was bad. As more people eyeballs came, as the sport democratized a little bit, we're seeing right now the fruits of the new women's college basketball. Last year, LSU won the national championship. It was they were a first time winner. If Iowa had won this weekend, Iowa would be a first time winner. That doesn't happen that much in women's college basketball. It's been 16 years, I think, between LSU and the last first time winner. It just doesn't happen. And that we're seeing is a much more interesting from a storyline standpoint, from a TV rating, social media, all of that stuff. It's much more interesting now. South Carolina, let's dive into some of their numbers, Scott, because South Carolina is now part of the elite. They are the elite. They spent more on women's basketball in 2023 than any other public school in the country. That number is $10.8 million. On the revenue side, ticket sales, they sold 1.4 million in tickets. That's fourth most among public universities. That number is obviously going to go up quite significantly. They play in an 18,000 seat arena, which is big by college basketball standards. They led the country in attendance this year, but did not sell out, which means that there's even more room, not just in raising ticket prices, but also just in selling more that they can have. That's not an option for a school like Iowa, which sold out every game. There's a whole bunch on the business side of the ledger. Being an SEC school matters as well. South Carolina women's basketball, in addition to being dominant on the court, is dominant off the court from a business standpoint. And if you think about schools that are poised to capitalize on this newfound commercial opportunity in women's college basketball, South Carolina is one of, it's on the Mount Rushmore for sure. It's one of the top two or three names on the list of, if things jump into another tier, who's going to be the one that's making the money and spending the money? South Carolina is your best bet.
And you were talking and I was looking to, as you were, you know, what was the Under Armour ad? Did you see the UA ad?
I did. Yeah.
You win some, you lose none. I mean, yeah. That's pretty damn good. Like good work, Under Armour. I saw somebody tweet, "Is Under Armour back?" Like, it's going to take more than a little bit of that to.
It's a very Nike thing, right? It's good copywriting. It's concise. It's very short amount of words.
Punchy. It was very punchy.
Yeah, very much out of the Nike playbook. And just to go to the other side real quick Iowa.
I didn't really answer any of your questions there. I got distracted. No, go. You answer the other side on Iowa. Go by all means. Well, why should the co-host say anything? No, go ahead.
Since you left the door open, I will.
How about this? Eben, what about Iowa? Thank you. I feel like I've done something.
Good question, Scott. Good question. I was in a little bit of a different position. South Carolina firmly in the sports elite. I think there is a bigger question at Iowa about how much the huge business growth they saw in the last few years was just Caitlin Clark. And their recruiting classes have gotten better over the past few years. I don't think Iowa is going to drop off the face of the earth from a women's basketball standpoint. But I think Iowa is not yet at the place where South Carolina is, where they are firmly in that tier one A business status.
Well, you won a championship with freshmen. Like you said, like these were the kids. Like, you're going to have all these people back from an undefeated team that, my Lord.
And this is after last year, all five starters, I think, left for the W or left for other opportunities. Retooled the entire team. And I don't know if you watched any of the games, Scott. They were dominant, certainly from a size perspective.
I was at the Hockey National Championships. I made my way over to Plymouth, Michigan, at least for our age. I could not. I was one of the few who was not watching, but people were talking about it. In case anybody wondering, the focus group of one, finished in third place, lost in the semifinals to Mount St. Charles. Congratulations to our friends on that team, including Braden Scuderi, who scored the overtime winner over Shattuck St. Mary to win the tournament. But the boys finished number three in the country, number one among club teams. Fantastic year. Okay, you were saying.
Very nice. Wow, that was a stream of consciousness right there. I think the another interesting question here and something to talk about is what the NCAA does from here. The NCAA sells the women's basketball tournament media rights as part of a huge package of 40 plus championships. It was in the market
to
sell that.
Kudos to Jimmy Pitaro for locking that thing down early. Is Jimmy Pitaro.
So there was all this talk when the NCAA was in the market in the past year. Do they spin off the women's basketball team, sell it separately from all the others, or do you keep this package intact? They chose to keep the package intact. ESPN re-upped its deal, 8-year, $920 million deal. A decent chunk increase over the past deal, Scott, but literally two months after that deal was announced, that looks like a heck of a deal for ESPN. As you're saying, all of these records that were the Iowa's Elite Eight game against LSU was the second or third most watched women's basketball.
Yeah, every game sets a record. Yeah.
Yeah. Then the Final Four game set the new record, and we're recording this before we have the finals numbers.
No,
new record. I did it. I'm sorry.
Why don't you just show a rendering? Oh, God.
Well, Scott hates the new record. You know, I think
record
this is,
by definition is new. You set a record.
I'm talking about a record that was set 2 weeks prior or eight days prior.
It's a record.
Either way.
Record's a record. Don't talk
about it. We're recording before the final numbers come in, but I'm expecting the finals numbers to be a record as well.
A record.
Got it. Yeah. So the ESPN getting that deal locked in, if that was in the market now, I think the NCAA would treat it quite differently, and I think the price would be quite different.
Yep.
But ESPN getting in and getting eight more years before this massive growth that we're talking about ends up being really good for them. And then pressure on the NCAA elsewhere, Scott, to provide more around this women's basketball tournament. There have been pressure in the past around March Madness and unequal weight.
It feels like a decade plus where that viral photo, I don't remember who sent it, but it was the weight room you were just referencing.
Sedona Price sent it.
Where she sent that. Look at what we get. Look what the men. It feels like 20 years ago that happened. And it was what, 2021, I think? Look where the game is already in that short period.
3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you've got sort of all of the existing investors. Forget perspective. We have people like Dave Blitzer, established sports folks looking to put money into women's sports. We're seeing private equity funds devoted, Monarch Collective with Kara Nortman, directly to women's sports. We are just seeing the tidal wave is moving. And then tangentially, we've got the WNBA broadcast deal up. Normally, just an afterthought, a drag along on the NBA, if you would. You know, this is where Adam Silver would have to go to the networks and say, you got to pump that. You want the NBA? You better pump the number up for the WNBA. It really was just a drag along. Now, if I'm Kathy Engelbert, I've got I've got Angel Reese. I've got Caitlin Clark. I've got women's sports booming. I've got value. Look at what the data says about sponsorship and who does the buying and their loyalty to brands that are associated with it. Look at the data. Now, all of a sudden, if I'm Kathy Engelbert, I don't want to be a drag along. I can stand on my own, and I'm going to get myself a hell of a deal. So that's going to be fun to watch as well.
The WNBA media talks are the exact antidote to what we were talking about the NCAA's ESPN, right?
Yep,
ESPN got in before women's college basketball became literally the center of the American sports media ecosystem for three straight weeks in March and April. And now the W gets to be in the market, knowing that, as you said, Angel and Caitlin and Camila Cardoza, the star at South Carolina, all of them are entering the draft. The pipeline of younger stars in women's basketball, like Juju Watkins and Hannah Hidalgo, is really strong.
Look at you.
These are names I did not know 4 months ago, Scott.
Yeah.
But that's how deep the and how quickly college basketball, women's college basketball specifically, kind of became in the American sports consciousness in the past month. And that definitely benefits Kathy. I mean, her bargaining position, I imagine, is dramatically different now than it was literally just 8 weeks ago.
And of course, Charlie Baker said, you know, at the side of the women's Final Four that, yep, we're going to be giving units. And we hate this term. You and I hate this. And it's so NCAA. We're going to be giving out units on the women's side, which really just means the schools are going to be paid money based on their postseason success. What is it still pinned on your Twitter feed?
The video is still pinned on the Twitter feed.
If you don't know how units work, and I'm going to boil it down to this and everybody understand it. You get paid for every win in the NCAA tournament. That's
essentially.
And it goes to the conference, and it's not exactly the same in each conference, but that you could be the worst team in whatever conference, let's just say the ACC. If you're the worst team in the ACC, you benefit mightily from a North Carolina, a Duke, I'd say a Syracuse, but God knows they're not winning anything in the NCAA tournament. You benefit from, John Wildeck. You benefit greatly from the teams in your conference winning games in the NCAA tournament. Money goes to the conference and then gets distributed. And your video really just, I mean, spells it out exactly how it works, how much each win is worth. And so the women did not have that. It's still the women couldn't use March Madness 2 years ago. I mean, the trademark term March Madness, it is madness that it is taken. I don't know, is it this long, the explosion for people to see, just the equitable treatment? I'm not even sure where I want to go with that. But speaking of equitable, I'm going to pat myself on the back. Is that okay with you?
Please. Self-tire pump.
So many years ago, I don't remember how many years ago, and I went back and tried to find the column, and darn you, Bloomberg, and like I just can't find some of the old stuff. But I wrote a column saying that the New York Knicks should interview Pat Summitt, the former coach at Tennessee for their coaching gig. And the best part about it was, I think, this little description scene that I had. I was at Madison Square Garden, and my friend Donnie Walsh came by. Donnie was the GM or the president of basketball, whatever it was, you know, that guy, the basketball decision maker, who had spent years in Indiana. You know, he was the Reggie Miller put together guy. And then Donnie came to New York. He was putting together a very nice team. And so I'm talking to Donnie, and I don't remember, again, I'm going by memory here. I set him up. I really did. I set up the question. And then I said, well, will you interview Pat Summitt? And he just laughed. He was like, no. I mean, it was just a flat out no. And the answer was really just based on, well, because. Like that, there was no answer.
No good reason.
Yeah, there was no good reason. And I'm not making fun of, you know, Donnie Walsh at the time. I mean, it was just sort of, I think that would have been the widely held belief. No, you're not going to have a female coach in the NBA. And we've seen Becky Hammond, you know, obviously Pop brought her in. But I'm just looking now. It seems like you got John Calipari, like the knee jerk again. Calipari leaving Kentucky looks like to go to Arkansas. A blue blood program like Kentucky needs a coach. And before anybody can even say, you know, do you want to talk to Dawn Staley? Like, seems like she's got the goods to coach anybody. It's like, wait a minute, Danny Hurley. Like, we got to get Danny Hurley down here. Right, what he's done at UConn. And that's, by the way, would I be insulting him if I said you're the Dawn Staley of the men's side right now? No.
No, you know? Not at all.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so that's what
I'm saying.
But why not talk to Dawn Staley? It just still doesn't seem like that would ever happen.
Yeah, it's and in some ways the economics can solve part of this, right?
Sure.
That Dawn Staley is making $3.1 million this year. Mm-hmm. It's one of the highest totals in women's basketball. It would, if you look at it on the men's side, it's mid to low tier, I guess, technically.
Yeah.
Right. But both Dawn Staley and Kim Mulkey, who's the coach at LSU, are making more than the men's basketball coach on their campus. And as much as I would love to see Dawn Staley take over Kentucky and bring the men's team to the Final Four or whatever, in some ways, if she wants to keep coaching women's basketball, the financially, the more she gets paid, the less kind of that imperative is, I think, to move over in some ways, right?
This would be the trailblazer, break the mold, be the fur, you know, that kind
totally.
Of stuff.
And I'm totally
and
on
by
board
the way,
that,
there is a difference between $3 million and $20 million. Like, what do you think, if Danny Hurley goes to Kentucky, what do you think his aggregate pay package is going to be?
Yeah, probably 10, 11,
I'd
something
say
like
higher.
That.
I would say, and by the way,
an
NIL fund and everything you need to absolutely bring that program back to dominance.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Totally. I just, the couple years ago, like coaching in the men's side would have meant like just such a huge difference.
Yes.
And again, there are now some women's coaches, rightfully so, both Kim and Dawn deserve this to be paid more than the men's coaches on their campus.
Yeah.
And that is a step towards
tell me who the men's coach is at South Carolina.
I actually do because I wrote it in a story.
Oh, that doesn't count. I forget.
His name is Lamont Paris. But you're right. Oh, and I can't name the LSU one. I would say
Dale Brown.
Right now.
I don't know
it's
if you laugh
Will
at
Wade,
that because
that's
like shows how old I am by saying Dale Brown.
Totally. Yeah. But yeah, the men's teams obviously still bring in more money. But if you think about the kind of delta between what a great coach and a good coach is, X or Y, yeah, the Kim Mulkey is worth more right now to LSU than the men's basketball coach. And Dawn Staley is definitely worth more to South Carolina right now than Lamont Paris. And it is good to at least see in some ways the salaries reflecting that reality, because that was not true 5 years ago.
I'd be interested, could Lamont Paris coach the South Carolina women's team to a championship? That would be That's what I'd like to find out. And who by knows? The way, how powerful are they? And we noticed, and I mentioned this the other day, and I'm still trying to get exactly the why, but we saw Southern Cal, which for years had told media, do not call our university Southern Cal. It is not Southern Cal. It's either USC, University of Southern California, but don't say Southern Cal. So what do they do in the tournament? They put Southern Cal on their jersey. And my hypothesis, I speculate, is because if you say USC to anybody around women's basketball, they are talking Dawn Staley in South Carolina. They are not thinking about the USC Trojans. Like, for once, they are overshadowed. They are eclipsed. They are not the default USC in the sports fan brain. And they said, we got to do something about this. And they put Southern Cal on their jersey years and years after telling the media, don't call us Southern Cal.
I wish we could get an actual answer to that question, because I don't think that you're right, but I would be fascinated if you were, because
I'm saying it played a part. It may not be the only reason, but there's no way it didn't play a part that USC in the default in women's basketball has become South Carolina.
Knowing the way, just the ego and the holier than thou that exists at the elite private institutions in this country, and I went to one of them. I saw it firsthand.
Princeton lightweight football, baby.
The idea that Southern Cal would change the way it markets itself because of the University of South Carolina's women's basketball team is such a great little story. I hope that is true. And if we could find out that it definitely was, that would be that's amazing.
By the way, should we give out ideas for free on this show? Should we?
Please.
I mean, no, I don't. I mean, South Carolina, you're telling me
not the good ones,
if South Carolina or USC has these millions of dollars to pay Dawn Staley, what I know she's got, you know, I think we can trademark. I know the back of t-shirt, front of t-shirt, what all the players should be wearing on day one of practice next year.
Okay. Yeah. I'm intrigued.
Okay. Ready? Yep. We like punchy. Three words. With that kind of what would you call it? Red? What is their color? South Carolina? Whatever it is. Okay, but then I want it right on front, right on the front. Won't get cocky. That's it. That's your 3-word practice shirt day one. That is their mantra for next year. Won't get cocky.
And you have nothing.
And you're loving it. You're loving it. That's the you have nothing to. You can't believe this is a good idea on every level.
I was prepared to roll my eyes at this idea.
You are liking this. You're ready to poke holes and you can't do it.
Don't hate it. I think it's good. Yep. I think it's very good. I think you should call them. Or trademark it first, maybe.
Yeah, trademark it first. Right. Yeah. USPTO.gov. I got it. I've traded. Don't forget. I actually, years ago, true story. Now we're going back.
Yeah.
You know, I said it first in the office when we had a little inside knowledge that Chris Bosh, LeBron James, and Dwayne Wade were going to team up in Miami. And I said, oh, Heatlemania, right? I was like, Beatlemania, the three. I was like, Heatlemania. And somebody, a pal of mine, said, why don't we trademark it? And we did. And the funny thing is, we had actually talked to the Heat about a license for the term. And then, of course, not that I'm ever rooting for a team to win or lose, but remember year one, what happened to that team? They lost to the Dallas Mavericks.
Yep.
Right. So, if they didn't win the championship, but had they won that first championship, I think there could have been a license for Heatlemania coming to Soshnik. Yeah.
That's right around the time I joined Bloomberg. I remember this very vividly, actually. That off season was the summer before I started at Bloomberg. And I knew that I was taking the internship, but I had like 2 or 3 weeks to go. And I got a call from a buddy of mine, lived in Miami, family member worked in real estate, who was like, LeBron James is touring real estate in Miami. So I heard that and I was like, oh my God, LeBron's going to Miami. Like I got the scoop. Like I got it. So I hadn't started working yet, but I called Jay Bieberman, who was running the sports team at Bloomberg. And I was like, I got to tell you, I got a hot one here. I can tell you LeBron is going to Miami.
This makes me laugh.
He's like, okay, how do you know? I was like, I can tell you because I know that he's looking at property. And Jay was like, well, he's probably looking at property in all the places he's considering going. I was like,
shot a hole in your thing argument right away.
Okay, well then never mind. I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Or maybe just a tax-free state wanted to, you know, maybe just want to buy a house in Miami. So I wouldn't say it was solid, but it was a good tip.
I know for a fact. And he was like, yeah, that's interesting. He's probably also looking at real estate in New York and in LA.
It was still worthy of following up on. So stay on top of, you know, tell the agent if he buys the property. If, you know, exactly. If you get to negotiations where he puts an offer in, that's what you need to do. That was the follow-up. Is he putting any offers in?
That was a good welcome to the industry moment for me when I was like, oh my God, I'm about to break sports media, and then realized that the entire reporting process was flawed.
That's funny. Sounds like some of our competition. Ooh, shots fired. Sorry.
Ricochet shot. Sorry. Right there.
I didn't mean that. Since we're talking about basketball and money, how about the NBA and the media deal that they're coming up on? We've heard about it for a long time. There's going to be a streaming component, obviously, over the air. I fully expect them to be back with Turner or, you know, WMD and ESPN. So, I mean, the number is really all we're looking at. If we have a streaming component, there'll probably be some exclusivity. I don't know. Do I pay less since Christmas is now an NFL year? What do you think? Are we doing 2x, 2x, 2.5x? Where are you?
This is such a fascinating one. And the debate in our industry over the X, is it going to be 1.5? Is it going to be 2? Is it going to be 2.5? Is it going to be 3?
That's what we're debating.
No, I know. It's it seems like the thing kind of ebbs and flows in terms of it's going to be high. Oh, it may not be that high. Oh, no, I think it's going to be high again. It's $24 billion, I think, right now is the total.
Yep.
So 75 would be the triple. I won't begin just like ratings. I'm going to be horrible at this no matter what. So I'm not going to give offer a guess. I do think that, and Mark Cuban said as much, after he's agreed to sell the Mavericks, the NBA, I think, is going to be fine right
this
now.
This time.
There's enough. The streaming companies are just new enough now, and I sound like a broken record here, I know. They're just new enough now that they're still in that spend money now.
Let's utilize the language overpay. Of Wall Street. We got dry powder out there.
Dry powder. Yeah. It's the one after this that would concern me more. I think the NBA has done a really good job in terms of just being a part of the American sports landscape and becoming more kind of culturally relevant. I think Adam Silver's push to do the in-season tournament, which is going to boost the value of these media rights, I think was a really smart decision. I think we're going to see other leagues mimicking that in some capacity as well. I'm not a basketball fan. I'm definitely not an NBA fan, so I won't comment about the product itself, but I think the NBA is in a good position to get a very significant rights increase right now. I think the bigger question is what happens in 7 or 8 years, and what does that look like?
Do you go that long this time?
I'm expecting a big multiplier.
Okay. Did I, by the way, earlier, I don't know why this is bouncing, but did I say WMD in my use of like weapons of mass destruction instead of Warner Brothers Discovery, WBD? Did I say WMD? I have no idea why, but there, after like, you know, the 2 minutes later, somewhere in the back of my head, it said, did you say WMD? And nobody's flagging us here. Nobody's saying you said the wrong thing.
Oh, the producer's not in your
ear,
Scott.
Yeah, there's no producer in my ear. There's nothing. It's just for some reason, like my medulla said, I think you said WMD. I think you said, right? Maybe not. But anyway, I have no
idea.
That's
amazing.
And you know, all right, we touched on some youth hockey, although it's not so much longer. I'm going to be calling him. He's got one more year technically of youth hockey. You know, it's like, I can't believe he's going to be midget. Which is, you know, that's kind of like the end of it. And then you get big boy real stuff. So I don't know. We'll see on that.
How long do you think we keep using midget as a name? Is that a controversial thing at all in hockey circles?
No, I have not heard anybody complaining. Then again, okay. I don't see little person people skating. You know, I would not at that level. I don't know. That's a good question. I see what you're right.
That's a different word in a couple of years.
Mike Pee Wee.
When my focus group of one is playing.
Yeah. Oh, look at you. Look at you foreshadowing. Nice. Oh, anything you want to tell us?
Who knows? Nothing to say right now.
All right. Let's get on to the Frozen Four. Speaking of nothing to say, hockey, money. Every time we write about the Frozen Four, people devour. People read it. Like it's, there is this, you know, the hockey community is big, but you've got some blue blood stuff here. Like you, I don't know. I haven't seen any promotion. I don't know. ESPN has it, so you think you'd see, but like BC and Michigan, come on. Those are two major programs. If you ever been to Michigan for a hockey game, you got some real stuff there. And then BU playing Denver, another, you know, blue blood hockey program that's won championships. This is some big, big stuff, yet the money is not there yet. What you really need is somebody like Terry Pegula to donate $90 million so you can put up a wonderful on-campus arena, become a Division I program, show it to recruits, say, come here and play, and they do. And that, but I'm a big believer. We talked to a major conference commissioner about perhaps adding hockey teams in his conference, and he said, like the idea, but it really is, like, for now, a club-level game for us, even though a nearby NHL team did inquire, actually was proactive, reached out and said, is there anything we can do to facilitate, to help, perhaps the promotion of a Division I program or two in your conference? So I'm kind of looking down the road here, but people are seeing there's capital involved, there's revenue to be made, and when you talk about revenue-generating sports, it doesn't just have to be football and basketball, especially when football leaves.
The challenge, two challenges for hockey at the collegiate level. One, the sport is obviously regional. So there's just huge swaths of the country where people don't play it.
You know who just won the tier two, I think U14 championship? Arizona.
Yeah. That
Arizona State's a nice program.
Austin Matthews can be in Arizona and become one of the best players in the country. But the truth is that if you look at the high school level, there's not a lot of high school hockey in Arizona.
Florida, play at the rink on the beach, baby. That's what it's called.
So there's geographical challenges. There's also financial challenges. It is expensive.
It is expensive. You need the rink.
This is not a tennis team where you recruit 7 or 10 players. It's a big team. You need a rink. It's a lot of travel. It's a lot of equipment. All those things. And if you're in Arizona, you can bet the travel bill they have to go up to Alaska and go up to Denver and to Minnesota, et cetera, is also quite large. So those are the two challenges. The upside is exactly what you said. The revenue opportunities are there. If you were to look at and Sportico keeps a lot of this data for you, but if you were to look at all the college programs that sell more than $1 million a year in tickets, you obviously have hundreds of football programs. You've got a whole lot of men's basketball programs. You've got a handful of women's basketball programs, the big ones.
Yep.
And then
one
you have
volleyball
little
program.
Little pockets of other sports.
Softball and
So there's a couple baseball teams. There's probably a couple softball teams. There may be a gymnastics team or wrestling team here or there. But men's ice hockey fits really well in that. In the non basketball or football bucket of what programs sell the most, there are some very, very high, there's $1 million plus ticket sale programs out there, a good chunk of them. I wouldn't be shocked if a number of the Final Four, Frozen Four teams that you mentioned are in that bucket as well.
Yes.
So it is expensive, but in terms of, as you think about how you make money in this world, particularly around ticket sales, it can be a money generator. And that's really valuable also. I agree with you. I think we are in 20 years going to look back at the amount of big time college programs that have men's hockey and probably women's hockey also as a much bigger number, not unlike we saw with lacrosse, right, which spread into the SEC. It spread out west in the past two decades.
Yeah, far less revenue commitment to make lacrosse other than getting a rink
less.
Going. Yeah,
far less. So
you said 20 years, my
well.
Focus group is 14 coming up. So when he's 34, 35, you think there'll be some decent opportunity for him?
Yeah, he's going to be the goalie coach at UCLA.
That would be nice.
And what a job that's going to be.
The Westwood Wizards. Yeah, exactly. Put them out there.
Exactly,
he'd be the goalie at UCLA. I'd have a funny feeling you'd have a really good time in college. All right, let's finish up with
that's my sense also.
Oh, and how about, I should have said, I'll have his first trading card. And then we segue. You want it? You go ahead. Go ahead and do it. I'll say, I'll have him sign his first set of trading cards for you and me.
Easy segue. Shout out to Darren Revelle, who started his own, raised money, $4 million from a group of a number of very prominent sports team owners, just launched today on Monday, Collect, which is a digital media company aimed at covering the sports collectibles market. Timing, not a coincidence.
Sports collectibles. Old investment class.
Alt investment class. Sports collectibles have hit a new stratosphere in the past 4 or 5 years, and we can debate how much the pandemic or other things, alternate investment vehicles are attributable to that. But
Darren says it himself. Darren says the pandemic was a big shot in the arm, where people were like, they wanted to like go back to things that made them feel good about their youth. Like they're sitting in their homes and nothing to do. And but the question is, does it die now that it, but we haven't seen it, and I'm seeing seen, it's sort of a professionalization of it all. Steve Cohen getting involved, you know, Michael Rubin getting involved. We're just seeing sort of a professionalization of collectibles. So if the market's there and, you know, you need people to write about it and cover it, Darren's the right guy to do it.
And so Darren spent the last 5 years at Action Network. And I think this business is actually going to kind of be similar. Obviously, sports betting and collectibles are not exactly the same thing, but Action Network did a really good job very quickly of becoming one of the industry resources for people who really care about that world. There was a lot of affiliate marketing money to be made via Action, and then there was a good exit. The company sold a better collective, and a lot of the early people, including Darren, got a lot of money out of it. So I think the collect is probably a kind of a similar playbook in stand up in this world that is growing, where increasingly smart sports fans are want to read more about, hear more about. Maybe there's some affiliate marketing opportunities in collectibles as well. And then, yeah, who knows what the long-term future holds. But as you know, Scott, standing up a digital media company is not easy. It is a lot of work, and I'm certainly wishing Darren good luck as he adds another publication to our little industry.
I too say good luck to my friend Darren. I got a meeting in 5 minutes. Why don't you just close? I was going to go somewhere else, right. But did you hear the alarm go off? Could you hear that?
I did not hear.
Oh, you know how I set my alarms for meetings? It just went off. I'm like, oh God, I forgot I have that meeting. So yeah, go ahead, close it up.
Well, we'll get Scott to his meeting. You can find Scott on Twitter at Soshnik. I am Evan Novi Williams. You can find me on Twitter at Novi_Williams. The show is produced by Aaron Greenewald. Thank you very much to Aaron. Sportico's digital media editor, Cora Veltman, would like you to know that you can follow the show at Sporticast, which is the hub of the Sportico Media Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.